Monday, February 23rd. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White and Al Melchior. We're doing a shortstop preview here. I feel like we're doing the catcher preview again because shortstops are terrible.
Oh, awful, awful.
Just an awful
position. Just bad.
Yeah. And yet, like catchers, they're very integral to a team's defense.
They are, and it's a good thing they are because they can't hit for you know what. Welcome to the show, everybody. Fantasy baseball at CBSI.com is our email address. We'll do a mailbag show later in the week. Fantasy baseball at CBSI.com. After this, we still have starting pitcher, outfield, and relief pitcher to get through. Then we'll look at sleepers, breakouts, busts. You know, we do that within each position preview, but we'll expand more in those separate podcasts. We'll look at AL only and NL only. We'll do some auction strategy. We'll just keep you updated on the news. Spring training is getting closer and closer, so we'll have plenty to talk about. I got to say one thing here, a lesson. Well, I already knew it, but I learned it again in my fantasy basketball league over the weekend. If you are a commissioner, no three-day weeks allowed. So that's the one week that you have to worry about is after the All-Star break, especially if you're in a categories league. That counts each category. Because I lost 8-1 in my fantasy basketball league, and now I'm done. And I had one of the best teams, and I'm done. I'm not going to make the freaking playoffs. I lost 8-1 because of a three-day week. Stupid. Should have been a 10-day week. Change the format.
Is this
basketball.
This is basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that one week.
That's a different animal.
No, but there's
Adam,
that one week after the All-Star break where there's only three games.
Well, there's only 3 days.
There's only
teams
3 days.
Teams probably played one game.
No,
a lot of them.
They all played two. Most of them played two.
Most of them played two?
Yeah. Now, this was a little different because with the trade deadline, you had some guys who were sitting out, things like that. But you don't want to see, like, after 3 days of any particular week in a categories league, it could be 8-1. And then it could end up 5-4.
Listen, I'm a company guy, Adam. All right,
change it.
If I don't even know who's responsible for determining this, but whoever they are, if they decide it should be a 3-game week, then I'm saying it should be a 3-game week.
Commissioner, make the
change.
Look,
what are we gonna do? Are we just gonna, for the podcast purposes, we're going to say it's a 10-game week, and from then on, we're gonna be like, oh, let's talk about fantasy week 15, even
What's
though it's
wrong
going to show up for fantasy week 16.
What's
for
wrong
all
with
you
that? We do it
there.
Every year in our podcast leagues. I've done it as the commissioner.
Well, okay, you can do it in that league, but we still have to address it as what it is.
All right, so you address it as what it is. You address it as here's your advice if you're doing the 3-day week. Here's your advice if you're doing the 10-day week.
I just can't get that bent out of shape on it. If that win determines whether or not you make the playoffs or not.
8-1. You never lose 8-1. 8-1 is unheard of. But over 3 days, it could happen. Over 7,
it's unheard
of. In that format,
it just magnifies what happens in those
two games. Well, that's why
you
shouldn't play that format.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with the format. 3-day weeks. 3-day weeks is just...
You lose one category to 8, you should be 0-1 for the week.
One game in the standing should not be determined over 3 days in baseball. That's just silly. It should be 7 days or 10 days, not 7.
You want them to go back to starting the season on a Thursday? That's probably the best alternative.
Why? No, because the All-Star game is going to be on a Tuesday. The games are going to start again on a Friday.
Right, that week's always,
it's always
going to
be the 3-day week. Well,
right,
that was fun.
You begin each week on a Thursday is what I'm saying. Never mind.
Oh, no. I don't want that.
Okay. Well.
It just disrupts the whole flow of life.
Like, you could make the reverse argument. Okay, 3 games is too few to count as a week, but 10 is too many. Why does that week only count for 1 win if it's your best week of the whole season? And I mean that
because
on
10 is not too many. 3 is too few, though. the difference between 3 and 7.
It's completely arbitrary.
More is better.
More is better. More is fairer. So let's get into shortstops, and then we'll do some news and notes. We have a lot of news and notes. Yoan Moncada was signed by the Red Sox. We've got news about the Red Sox outfield. We've got some K-Rod news. Matt Harvey, Adam Wainwright, Zach Greinke. We'll try to get to that as quickly as possible within this preview. But I ask you, is Troy Tulowitzki a first-round pick in your mind?
He's a first-round pick in my mind and just out there in objective reality.
Not in my mind.
Well, you better get with reality then. I do think he's a first-round pick. And you can make all the arguments you want about all the missed time, but he's really in a class all his own in terms of per-game production.
No disputing that. The question is, I know Scott thinks he's a first-rounder too. So how many games do you need to see from Troy Tulowitzki to be satisfied with him as a first-round pick?
120, let's say.
That's what I was going with.
Yeah.
And I feel pretty confident I'll get that.
So I'll make my case against him. This is a position where your replacement level player is likely to be pretty lousy. You're not replacing an outfielder. You're replacing a shortstop. It's hard enough to find 12 good ones. Now you got to go to waivers when Tulo gets hurt. He has chronic leg issues. It's not like a guy who, fluke injury, ran into the wall and hurt his shoulder, slid into home and hurt his ankle, slid into first and hurt his thumb. It's nothing like that. It's chronic leg injuries that pop up a lot. He's hurt every single year. And also, last year he was amazing. Last year was his best year ever. He's always great. But don't base it on last year when it was his best year ever, kind of like Hanley Ramirez 2 years ago. I got no beef with his per game production. I just want to point it out that he was having his best year. So I just think it's very tough to replace him. If he gets hurt at the wrong time of the year, then those 120 games aren't going to mean much for you, especially in a head-to-head format. In a roto format's a little bit different. But in a head-to-head format, if you're in your playoffs and you're using like Brad Miller because Tulo's hurt, you're going to be pretty upset you lost your first-round pick.
Yeah, the timing could be unfortunate there, but you don't really know what is going to happen for him. And I would add I can't remember what your points now. I lost my train of thought, Adam.
Chronic leg injuries, best year ever.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say 2 years ago was more of an outlier for him on the downside than last year was on the high side. Last year is pretty much who he was. 2 years ago, he was a little off.
Well, last year was
It was his career best season, but it was he's usually around there, even
he's
if that
a great
was.
Player, yeah.
So I don't even know that really counts. And some of these injuries over the years haven't been to his legs. Fractured ribs, oblique injury. But yeah, there have been a lot of leg injuries. So I'll give you that.
Very leggy.
But again, I'm not counting on him for 160 games. Just 120. Give it to me. Hopefully, you know, if he misses a 40-game stretch, it's in May and June rather than August and September. But I'm willing to roll the dice up to a certain point. I mean, if this wasn't an issue for Choi Tulowitzki, I would make the case he's the best player in fantasy. I would take him over Mike Trout. So, you know, we're factoring in the risk there just by dropping him to 10th or 11th or wherever in the first round it is we would take him.
All right, would you go Kershaw or Tulo?
Kershaw.
Yeah, I'd go Kershaw. Very close for me.
Would you go Jose Abreu or Troy Tulowitzki?
Abreu.
Yeah, and that really is, because I see them both as you take them about 10th or 11th. So,
how about Rizzo or Tulo?
I'll go Tulo.
Yeah, the line for me is there's really only, depending if you want to include the pitcher, Kershaw in there or not. Yeah, no, we're definitely including Kershaw. There's about 8 or 9 players who I'd say give you what I would consider to be first round production. So there's not really 12 legit first rounders. Tulo is kind of my first pick in at that barrier where you're really drafting second round guys late in the first round.
All right, last one. In a roto league, Carlos Gomez or Troy Tulowitzki?
Tulo.
Tulo.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then after Tulowitzki, 2, 3, and 4. Is interchangeable Hanley, Ian Desmond, Jose Reyes. That's Scott's order in a roto league, yeah. And for Al, it's Reyes, Desmond, Hanley, so the exact opposite. Just looking at the auction values, they're pretty close. I want to bring this up. Ian Desmond, top 3 shortstop, 3 straight seasons in rotisserie. Jose Reyes, top 3 shortstop in roto, 3 of the last 4. Hanley Ramirez, number 1 in 2010, hasn't been in the top 3 since, for whatever reason. A lot of it's been injury. So how did you guys make sense of Reyes, Desmond, Hanley? You know, how did you go about ranking those 3, and what do you see separating them?
I mean, for me, it's really just the sort of the mean level of production that I expect from each of them. But out of the 3, Desmond's the one that I have the most confidence in. I'm not expecting him to miss much time with injury. There is a certain consistency there, and you know where he's going to help you and where he's not going to help you. It's harder to do that with Reyes and Hanley. So, I mean, if safety is really the thing, you probably should give Desmond the priority and make him the second guy off the board.
I would say that's more for a roto league than a points league, though. since he is such a bad play discipline guy. And that's certainly where the difference came in for me between head-to-head and Roto. Reyes, as a guy, he's a good base stealer. He's not the elite base stealer he used to be, but he does get the doubles and you know, not a big strikeout guy. So that moves him up in that format ahead of Desmond for me. But two for me is Hanley, just because if there's any shortstop who could maybe threaten Tulowitzki's spot at the top, it's him. I don't think Reyes and Desmond really have a prayer of that, at least not on a per-game basis.
And what does the move to outfield do for Hanley Ramirez in your mind? Is he now in a better, well, I guess we can dispute the hitting park thing because you guys don't think it is.
I'll say that for a right-handed hitter. And look, Dodger Stadium and I don't remember the last name of the Marlins Stadium before they moved to Marlins Park.
Sun Life? Pro Player, Sun Life.
Yeah, changed names a lot. Joe Robbie Stadium.
There you go.
It was Landshark at one point.
Yeah, neither of those are good places to hit. So I'll give you the Fenway Park thing for him. It's hard to say what the position change is going to do for him, because I feel like motivation has been a big factor for him over the years, and it was clear he didn't like moving to third base for the Marlins. And that was probably the biggest drop for him statistically in his career when that happened. And it was also around the time he wasn't staying on the field that much for the Marlins either, which we could question how much motivation had to do with that. So, you know, maybe he just, how much of that is him not liking to play shortstop? How much of it is not liking the way the Marlins handled the transition or not liking the Marlins in general? It's hard to say. It seems like he's totally behind this move with the Red Sox, and I take that as a good sign. But when you start breaking down a player psychologically, you're really just guessing and reading between the lines and things they say.
Right. Well, but even last year with the Dodgers, he only played 128 games. Ramirez played 86 in 2013. He was great in 2013. But 2014, 283 with 13 home runs, 14 steals in 128 games. And what do you think? He's like an 18-steal guy at this point if he plays a full season?
Sounds about right.
Desmond, meanwhile, has been 23 straight years. But, Al, what do you make of the fact that Desmond had 183 strikeouts last year, career high, up from 145 in 2013, and he only batted 255. He was more of a 280, 290 hitter before last season.
Well, for me, that means that I can't really count on him to get back to being a guy that's going to help you with batting average. I'm pretty much assuming that 250 might be the upside for Desmond, and he's going to give you value with the steals and the power, but an RBI, of course.
And I think one thing to point out with Desmond, he is by far of the top four shortstops the healthiest, 154 games or more, four of the last five seasons.
Yeah, I think that plays into what Al was saying about him being the safest option. I just think if that wasn't an issue, he would be a tier behind the others.
But would he have been last year? Because I feel like the 255 batting average is making you say that, rightfully so. But
yeah.
But if he bounces back to 280, then he's right, like clearly in their tier, if not better.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's a big if, though, because just looking at his ratios, and he did it 2 years in a row, and that kind of surprised me, but I don't see him as being a good source of batting average. I think the 350, 360 range is closer to who he probably should have been all along.
All right. Let's take a quick pause from shortstops, go over some news and notes, and then we'll dive back into the position. So Boston signed Yoan Moncada to a $30 million signing bonus. We don't expect him to play this year, right?
Definitely not.
How about dynasty leagues? Let's say you're starting a dynasty league now. When do you see this guy getting drafted?
You're starting fresh with a dynasty league, 12-team league. He's, among prospects.
Okay, yeah, let's say you're not starting fresh. Let's say you've got your major league.
Okay, so you got your major league roster. Well, okay, but in that case, even if it's a league, or I should say, especially if it's a league, an established league where a lot of the top prospects are taken, he could be the top pick overall in a lot of dynasty leagues. And if you're just starting a minor league system now, he's still probably a first rounder.
Gotcha. Next year, chance he plays. Good chance?
decent chance. Obviously, it all depends on, I know it's super obvious, but it all depends on how it plays out this year. But if you know, make an assumption based on what he did in Cuba and what the scouting reports say, I would think probably by the end of next season.
I mean, they spent $60 million just on his signing bonus because they had to pay a 100% penalty. Mm-hmm. So I got to think he's going to play next year.
Yeah,
I've seen, I think Baseball America said, you know, once this is finalized, he's going to be their 10th overall prospect. I've seen other people say around 15-20 range. Yep. And that's 15-20 range is about where Jorge Soler is. So, you know, there's a year or two from now, depending on what positions Moncada is playing, because there's some question about that. We'll probably be valuing him in fantasy about on the same level we've been valuing Soler this year.
Fox Sports reports that Milwaukee's in talks with Francisco Rodriguez, who was their closer last year. We'll do a relief pitcher podcast probably next week, so we'll get to it then. Now, Matt Harvey, it seems like if they're going to make the playoffs, I guess their record's going to have something to do with his innings this year. That's kind of how I was interpreting it. Like, he'll throw 200 innings, but it'll include the playoffs. So if they're good, he might throw like 180. It seems a little speculative. 180 in the regular season. But based on what you guys have seen recently about Harvey's innings, has it affected your strategy with him this year, drafting Matt Harvey?
Well, no, because there's risk coming off of Tommy John surgery. The innings concern is something even before the Mets several months ago talked about him coming in under 200 innings. I mean, you had to assume there was going to be some sort of innings limit. So that's, I feel like that's all kind of built in to how you approach Harvey anyway this season.
Mm-hmm. How about Adam Wainwright? St. Louis may limit his spring training starts. Nothing about his regular season starts. But he's on my do not draft list.
Yeah, he's on my bust list. I don't know that the innings are going to be the reason why. Let's put it this way. If Wainwright is a disappointment in fantasy, it won't be the innings that are the reason for it. It'll be whatever was going on with him beginning in the All-Star game, actually. Through the end of the season, where he was just not the same pitcher, and his elbow, it was clear, wasn't healthy. It continued in the playoffs. He did have a minor elbow procedure in the offseason, so maybe that fixes it, but we've seen that happen from other pitchers before, and it doesn't, and eventually they're going in for something more significant.
So he shouldn't have given Derek Jeter a cookie in that All-Star game? Has that ruined everything?
Well,
you try to be respectful.
You know, that may have been his way of covering up what actually happened, which was that he was giving everybody cupcakes.
Or maybe that was what happened, whatever baked good. Yeah. Jeter lit him up a little bit, right?
Jeter got a double or triple on first at bat
of
the
game. Maybe he was just so mad. Maybe he was like, I'm the only pitcher that's giving up extra base hits to Derek Jeter, and it just ruined his confidence.
Maybe. That's
even if it was intentional, he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Dodgers here. Zach Greinke had an elbow injection a few days ago. He has since resumed throwing. I guess this is fairly normal for him. Any concerns about Greinke?
No.
Okay. The Dodgers signed Brandon Beachy. Does that matter?
I mean, it could. It's odd because this time last year, they had oodles of depth at starting pitcher. And now, you know, their number five star is Brett Anderson, who you can't really count on.
He's on the DL.
So, yeah. So they need some depth. Dodgers need some depth, and it's depth that they might need.
He's not really on the DL, but he will be. Josh Hamilton could miss closer to 12 weeks rather than the original 6 to 8 weeks. You guys stop me if there's analysis
to
be given.
With Hamilton, he was barely clinging on for me as a $1 player in Roto, and he is now out of the muddied zone. So I have no interest in him in any sort of 12-team mixed league.
Milwaukee is considering Tyler Thornburg for their rotation.
For their rotation?
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that's going to work. Because they've already basically said Jimmy Nelson is in, so what? Is Willie Peralta's job in danger? I don't understand. Is it just one of those, we're going to have a battle because we want everyone to be motivated to pitch their best kind of thing? I'm thinking that's probably it.
Okay. And David Freese is ripped. He's in better shape, and he may hit cleanup for the Angels. So, Al, I think you said you
nice second half last year.
Deep sleeper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now keep an eye on David Freese. Shortstop questions. We know it's a shallow position. What's your overall shortstop strategy?
Tulowitzki or probably waiting until late to draft, well, Bogarts seems to fall. Segura seems to fall. I also include Baez in the list of high upside middle-tier shortstops who could fall into the mid-teens. Now, the last of one of those or second to last of one of those is probably who I'm getting if I don't happen to be in the spot to draft Tulowitzki early.
I'm pretty much following the same strategy. I wouldn't mind having Javier Baez if I could get him late, and I suspect that maybe I could. But the issue in the mocks that we've done so far is just even kind of late in the draft, I just find that there's more intriguing options at other positions. So, in fact, we had our Dynasty League, not a mock, but an actual auction and draft this weekend. And I wound up with Josh Rutledge, who I'm not at all excited about. But it was the absolute last priority for me in terms of, you know, I waited until I had almost no money left. And in the draft, it's kind of the same thing. Our AL only mock.
Yeah.
I waited until I think it was the 19th round.
Yeah.
To the reserve rounds, actually, of a head-to-head draft to take a shortstop.
Because if you don't get Tulowitzki, you're just kind of assuming it's going to be crummy production anyway, so you might as well not invest a lot in it, unless it's one of those three. I really think those are the upside guys at the position, Baez, Bogarts, and Segura. But the key is you have to get them for a bargain. If you don't, then you're probably investing too much in that.
Okay, but what about the three guys we
just spent? No, that's a good...
They all went round four in our auto draft. So when would you feel comfortable taking Hanley or Desmond or Reyes?
And I'll actually say I took Hanley in at least one of the two, maybe both, in the fourth round there. And it was a situation where I wasn't thrilled to take him, but it was surprising to me he didn't go in round three, and the players who went in round three instead were the ones I kind of hoped to get there in round four. So it was just like I felt like that was my only option at that point in the draft. But it wasn't something I was looking to do or excited about doing. It's just that's beyond what that's lower than what I think is appropriate value for those guys, which is third round for Hanley in both formats, third round for Reyes in head-to-head, third round in Desmond in Roto.
Yeah, I was really pumped to take Desmond, and I think it was this Roto draft that took him in the fourth round. Really excited, and I guess I'd have to rethink it in points, but you guys are all in on Tulo in the first round. If I can get Desmond in the fourth round, forget it. He was the number one shortstop in fantasy last year. I have very confident he'll finish top three, extremely confident he'll finish top four if he stays healthy. So I'm all about Desmond if I can get him. Now, if you fall back, you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, I have a feeling that I will just strike out on those three of Reyes, Ramirez, and Desmond this year because, I mean, there would have to be a crazy run on first baseman and outfielders in the first three or four rounds for me to be at the point where I'm looking at shortstop and saying, well, I like what I've got here more than what I could do for my first baseman or my first,
let me tell you,
first outfielder.
Let me tell you who went around those times. So Desmond, Hanley, where's Reyes? Reyes went, then Posey, Darvish, Dickerson, Dozier. A little alliteration there. Watch this. Darvish, Dickerson, Dozier, Desmond. How about that? Followed by Hanley Ramirez. Then Todd Frazier, Matt Kemp, Zach Greinke, Albert Pujols, Nolan Arenado, Evan Longoria.
Yeah,
actually, I don't feel like those guys are like can't miss players.
I agree. That's why I took Hanley there, is because those guys, you know, Hanley is on the bottom end of the true studs for me because you can't count on him to play 100 games or 120 games. But in terms of projected output, I don't really think those other guys have anything on him, and I'd rather take the shortstop at that point.
Here's the thing that maybe could change this for me, and I don't think I'm going to do it, but I've given it a little bit of thought, which is that I've always prioritized getting an ace. And when I say prioritized, I don't mean first or second round, but just to make sure that somebody in or very close to my top 12 is on my roster, which means I've got to invest a pick, you know, within the first three or four rounds for sure. And you know, there's so much depth in starting pitching, but there's a lot of risk once you get beyond the top 18 or so, maybe even a little higher than that. I don't see myself taking the plunge and saying, you know, I'm okay not having Madbaum or Hamels or Strasburg or whoever. I'm going to collect, you know, three or four upper mid range guys. And, you know, if I were to go that route, then I could see investing an early pick in a shortstop. But there's just too many needs at that point. First base, outfield, getting my ace.
Well, yeah, but a lot of the aces were already gone in round three. I think Yu Darvish was the one who wasn't, right?
Okay,
yeah,
but if I've done that in round three, in round four, I'm probably wanting an outfielder.
What if you already got an outfielder? What if your first picks were first base and outfield already?
Okay, so I've got a first base and outfielder.
All the elite second basemen are gone, obviously, because they're gone by pitcher. Two. All the elite third basemen are gone.
It would have to be a perfect storm.
You know what, though? I think his philosophy, what Scott's saying right now is actually pretty realistic. Because I went first base, then Donaldson, then starting pitcher. But that could have easily been an outfielder instead of Donaldson.
Yeah.
And then I would have gone Desmond.
If I've
been fine with it.
I've got to take Donaldson if he's there, say, in the second round.
If he's there, but it may not work out.
So,
I mean, the second
right.
round third baseman are Rendon and Donaldson. The second round second baseman are Altuve, Rendon, and Cano. So if it doesn't work out perfectly for you to get one of those four players in the second round, then it's very likely you'll be in that same situation I was in the fourth round, looking at one of those shortstops, looking to take one of those shortstops or not.
Well, then who are some other fallback guys, Al, or if you don't see yourself taking one of those two, three, four guys? You know, we haven't spoken about Danny Santana yet, but he had a great year. And then there's a lot of guys that finished really high in last season's rankings, like Jimmy Rollins was the fourth best shortstop. Alcides Escobar was fifth in Roto, eighth in points. Alexi Ramirez was a top three shortstop. I don't think you guys want any of them.
I don't.
At least unless it's a total bargain.
Yep.
So who you can't just. I feel like you can't just draft Bogarts, Baez. Who's the third one? Segura.
Yeah. But yeah, pretty much that. You talk about fallbacks. That's it. And then, you know, maybe a little bit deeper. I do like Jed Lowrie this year. I feel like he's one of the more underappreciated shortstops, but that's still a late rounder. You know, there's not a lot there. And actually, some of the guys that are just below like my $1 level, there's some guys that I really like there, but I can get them late.
You know, there is one player who I've been surprised has lasted as long.
Johnny Peralta.
No, not Johnny Peralta.
J.J.
Actually, Danny Santana.
Oh, okay.
He went late in the eighth round in our head-to-head mock, and then first pick of the ninth round in our roto mock. And look, I don't think he was as good as he showed in a partial season last year. His BABIP, I think it was over 400.
I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah. I think it was over 400, which is obviously unsustainable. So, you know, he's not going to be a guy who's competing for the batting title, but I don't think he's going to bring you down in batting average either. With the kind of power and speed combination we used to expect from Starlin Castro, Castro doesn't look like much of a base stealer anymore. So I would put Santana clearly over him. And I think... I'm just surprised the chasm is as wide as it is, has been in our first two mocks between that second tier, the Desmond Reyes tier, and then Santana right after them.
Al, how do you feel about Santana? I watched the video you did on him. You mentioned his batting average on ground balls was extremely high, so that'll lower his batting average. I mean, whether you want to cite the BABIP thing or specifically
it's part of the BABIP, and it's what Scott was saying.
Yeah, how do you feel about him in the ninth round or the eighth round?
Yeah, I think that's okay. It's sort of the same argument that I was making earlier about the higher end guys that I've in the early mocks that we've done. I've certainly looked at him as an option. And ultimately just at that stage of the draft, that didn't feel like the place to pull the trigger, but maybe in another mock it will be. I think that's reasonable value. And the reason why, just to say, the reason why I didn't include Santana in the short list of fallback, shortstops is just because I think he's going to be valued highly enough that I won't get him at value. But if he drops a round or two in some mocks then or actual drafts, I'd be glad to take
beyond,
Santana.
Drops beyond round eight or nine. Because you may have been in a different you may have been in a different situation than I was in these two mocks we keep referring to. Okay, so let me double check here. I drafted Hanley in the head-to-head one for sure, and I drafted Hanley in the Roto one too. So I already had a shortstop beginning in round four that I wasn't thrilled to take. And then both times I remember Danny Santana still out there, basically round nine, and like, man, if I had known that, I wouldn't have taken Hanley. That's kind of the feeling I had, that regret, that tinge of regret.
Really? So you like Santana five rounds later better than Hanley?
Yeah. Yeah, for with the five-round gap. Now, if it was a two-round gap, that'd be a different story.
Sure,
but
sure.
Five rounds is the player, the remaining player pool looks a lot different in round nine than it does in round four.
I want to go back to talking about the Baez, Bogarts, Segura group. Three young guys who are trying to rebound from last year to varying degrees. I mean, Segura was awful. Baez was very brief, but pretty awful. And Bogarts... Bogarts was okay for points. His on-base was good until he moved to third base, and then he was terrible. And then he moved back to shortstop, and he was still terrible.
Oh, I don't know.
I got it broken down for you. All right. You ready?
Sure.
Xander Bogarts, first 54 games, all at shortstop. 296, 389, 427. With three home runs, one steal, 15 doubles.
Very, very encouraging start, especially that on-base percentage.
And read that last stat again.
Oh, 15 doubles?
Yeah. 56 games?
But only 54 games.
54 games.
Only three home runs, so it was very pointsy, which is fine, but just pointing it out.
Yeah, starting his career, you know, what do you expect?
Next 45 games, all at third base, 182 with five homers, but six walks, 46 strikeouts. He had a 1-2 walk-to-strikeout ratio in the first 54. Then the next 45, six walks, 46 Ks. Last 45 games, all at shortstop, 231, 262, 349 slugging, eight walks, 40 strikeouts.
Now, that was last 45 games. So I don't know what was going on those first 20 games, but the last 25 games, he had 320 with four home runs and an 824 OPS.
All right.
But what this all says to me is it's not necessarily about the position change then.
Yeah, I mean, the switch back kind of ruined things. But it was like the day they moved him to third, he started playing horribly.
Well, the good news is they're not going to move him to third now, right?
You wouldn't think so.
Well, yeah, so maybe he
got a big impediment. At
developed some bad habits, and then even after the move back, you know, it took him some time to...
it's possible.
Yeah, I know he struck out a lot less very late in the season.
Right, but
yeah,
I want to talk about just drafting them, because I said you can't just draft them. But I think you probably can if you're in a 12-team points league where people are pretty much only drafting one shortstop per team, maybe two on a few teams, and you can play the waiver wire if they're terrible. But if there's a roto league with a middle infielder, you know, how do you approach those three high upside guys?
It does make it harder, but like we were saying, you're basically expecting to get crap production from the position. If you draft any of the non-top five or six shortstops, seven, let's say, through Starlin Castro, you're expecting crap production anyway. So you either get it from them, and maybe it's a lot better. Maybe it's what everybody was paying round four prices for, or you resort to assured mediocrity on the waiver wire. And even if it's a roto league where people are filling middle infield spots, Jed Lowry went in the very last round of our roto mock. So did Alcides Escobar. It's possible one of them wouldn't have gotten drafted. There's still Brad Miller out there. Wilmer Flores, I think there's some offensive potential there. Daniel Murphy like potential offensively, I would say, for Wilmer Flores. Chris Owings. Jordy Mercer was actually pretty good the last 4 months last year.
And now you compare that to kind of the bottom of the standard mixed league barrel at second base. And actually, shortstop compares pretty favorably. Because you look at, I'm just looking at, for example, my dollar values. The low dollar guys, Prado, Aaron Hill, and then just below that cutoff, Alcantara, who I think with full-time play is going to rank much higher, but... We don't really know what his role is going to be. Solarte, Joe Panic, Jed Jerko is the one guy who maybe could really have huge production. But for the most part, it's Omar Infante, you know, guys that, I mean, that to me, that really has proven mediocrity. Yeah. Shortstops, there's a lot of guys who are they're unproven, but they could be very good.
Really?
Sure. Well, Scott mentioned Owings, Brad Miller.
I don't think they could be very good. I just don't think it's so clear they're going to be worse than like Elvis Andrews or J.J. Hardy.
Well, yeah, relative to the position.
Right.
I mean, at the position, that is very good.
It's so funny that you mentioned those two because I actually could see myself drafting Andrews and Hardy a lot because I feel like going into last year, I mean, they're obvious top 12 picks. They both had bad years. Hardy apparently was dealing with a back injury that he didn't really talk about. It was affecting him. He only hit what, 9 home runs last year, but he's usually an obvious 20-homer guy. And then Andrews, if the lineup's better, he'll score more runs. The 27 steals and 42 attempts is a little concerning. Why was the percentage so low? But he's only 26, so it doesn't really make sense for him to just fall off so badly when he was like consistently like a top 8 shortstop.
I feel like a lot of that was health, though, and so many of the great shortstops were obviously missing a lot of games.
Happens every year. It's going to happen
again borderline, this year. He's borderline top 12 if that doesn't happen.
But getting a guy who stays healthy, steals a lot of bases, and could score a lot of runs could do a lot for you.
It could, but I don't want to overrate the health thing because you know, Troy Tulowitzki for 120 games, maybe that's not the best comparison. Let's say Jose Reyes for 120 games and Jed Lowry for the other 40 is going to be better than a top 8 shortstop.
Possibly can't do it in Roto. Like, I get what you're saying in a points league. But with a middle infield spot.
But I just picked Jed Lowry. I mean, it could be Wilmer Flores or whatever. Whatever of that group of shortstop steps up with usable production. And that's all you're really asking for those other 40 games.
So would you guys maybe just use shortstop to get steals and just, like, I don't care what they do otherwise. I'm just going to take Alcides Escobar, take Andrews, or take Santana and just fill my steals through shortstop?
No. I mean, yes and no. Because I could see doing that with Escobar, but to get Santana or Andrews, I think you've got to make some kind of investment there. And I'm not really...
I don't feel like people are really downgrading Andrews based on last season, even though there is the concerns about why the steals rate dropped. There's concerns. I kind of feel like he was overrated all along, and maybe the Rangers lineup had something to do with that. Should be better this year. But is it going to be one of the best lineups in baseball like it was during Andrew's heyday? I'm skeptical of that.
All right, how about these three veterans? Esdrubal Cabrera, Jimmy Rollins, and Alexi Ramirez. Esdrubal Cabrera, Jimmy Rollins, Alexi Ramirez. How would you rank those three guys?
I would go Alexi Ramirez, Jimmy Rollins, and then Esdrubal Cabrera way lower.
Yeah, the same.
All right, let me ask you some more shortstop questions. Would you ever draft two high-end shortstops early to fill your middle infield spot?
Never, ever.
Okay. multiple position eligibility at shortstop. Who's got it?
All right, well, as always, Ben Zobrist has got it. Scott, you had these like right off the top of your head a moment ago.
Yeah, Javier Baez also plays second. Bogaerts also third. Esdrubal Cabrera also second.
Did you mention Santana?
I missed Danny Santana. Yeah, he's also outfield. But then beyond that, you know, we start getting into the lower end guys like Stephen Drew.
He's
also second base.
Yeah,
Hanley's eventually going to be outfield. Josh Rutledge is eventually going to be second base.
Eduardo Escobar is another one kind of in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
If Santana plays center, then he'd get playing time as a shortstop. And he wasn't bad in points leagues last year.
Oh, I wanted to bring something up about Santana. He was pretty good, really good playing outfield. Playing shortstop, he had .295, .321, .395 slugging with 12 extra base hits in 34 games. Whereas playing outfield, he was .316, .356, .487. With 27 extra base hits and 6 home runs in 69 games. I don't think he didn't homer once as a shortstop in 34 games. So I know you don't rely on him for homers, but he was a lot better as an outfielder. I kind of mentioned this with J.D. Martinez. He didn't play so well as a right fielder, which is what he's playing this year. Scott, you say he didn't care. Do you care about the shortstop outfield splits for Santana?
No, not at all, because I'm skeptical of that power split as an outfielder.
The average split was pretty significant, too.
Yeah, and then there's I'm skeptical there too because so much of that was BABIP driven, and it just might have played a disproportionate amount of time in outfield where he was, you know, getting seeing eye singles.
Okay.
So I don't I trust the strikeout rate a little more than the average.
How does the position change in AL only or NL only?
Well, the AL is pretty stacked actually. Once you get past Tulowitzki and Desmond, there's not a lot out there in the NL beyond those two guys. Now the AL obviously doesn't have a Tulowitzki, but Reyes, Hanley, Andrews, Danny Santana, Alexi Ramirez, you know, it's not overwhelming, but a lot of those top guys are in the AL as compared to the NL. So I think strategically what that tells me is I'm even more motivated in an NL league to make the move for Tulo, because you miss him and you're looking at pretty slim pickings.
Well, I know you're not nearly as high on Starlin Castro as I am. And it is worth pointing out two of those three high-end shortstops we kept referring to, Baez and Segura, are on the NL. Johnny Peralta's in the NL. I think it's a little more balanced than you give it credit for, but that's knowing that you're probably not going to value Castro as highly as the average person would either.
I'm below average in that regard, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's explore that. Talk to me about Starlin Castro.
It's too bad this isn't a video podcast. You can kind of, you know, stroking your make-believe goatee there.
Yeah, well, you guys are sitting on different chairs, like big comfy chairs, so it feels more like a therapy session today. So let's explore
that. I've got Starlin Castro issues, so let me tell you about those. Last year looked like a bounce-back season for him. The batting average was back up. The power numbers were up a bit. So if you look at his career as a whole, 2013 looks like this major outlier where he's this young player who's step-by-step progressing towards stardom level, and then 2013 was just this blip on the radar. But if you dig underneath, it looks a lot different. It looks like 2013 and 2014 are pretty much a part of the same block where his plate discipline isn't as good. He's striking out more. He's pole hitting a lot. And those are signs that just lead me to think that high average isn't something he's likely to repeat. And the one caveat I'll make to all this is that he is still very, very young.
25 in March.
Yeah. So not even really, you know, if he's in the peak years, it's really just the beginning and technically not in the peak years. So it's not to say that he can't reverse those 2 years, but it's not the slam dunk that it looks like where you say, wow, 2013, just toss that out the window, because a lot of the bad habits that he appeared to pick up in 2013 that hurt his production, he didn't really fix those last year.
Well, I don't feel like the strikeout rate increase 2 years ago was drastic. Last year, he struck out less than one every five at-bats, which is good for, you know, average major leaguer. So I don't know. I'm a little more on the other side. Now, what is discouraging is that he only stole four bases last year after stealing only nine the previous year. And before that, he was 25, 22. Looked like he was going to be a consistent contributor in that category. He's not enough of a power hitter for that really to carry him, but I do trust the batting average, because major and minor leagues, that's 2 years ago was the one blip,
right? But it's not the one blip, because you look through that minor league and the first 3 years in the majors, he was a much better than average contact hitter. So you're right, he wasn't a strikeout machine or anything, but relative to what he had been in his career before that, it wasn't nearly as good.
He went from striking out one every six at-bats to one every five. That's not alarming to me.
It's enough that in 2013, it dipped his average under 250.
Yeah, here's something.
Bounced back.
And the thing with Castro, though, is...
But he bounced back because he got all these hits on balls in play without getting infield hits and without hitting the other way. I don't see how he's going to be able to sustain that. That happens to players all the time, except when it doesn't come on the heels of an apparent bounce back year. Or I'm sorry, doesn't come on the heels of a down year like.
But
he had.
His BABIP last year was in line with where it was earlier in his career.
Right, but he's not the same hitter that he was before. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
The BABIP is lower. You could argue he had bad luck last year.
Well, he was only the number 12.
It was his highest BABIP since 2011,
Castro.
And he's not getting infield hits the way he did when he was younger.
He He hit 337 BABIP last year, was 344 in 2011. It was 346 in 2010. I mean,
right. And so you could be led to believe, oh, he's that player again. But you look at how he gets the hits. He's not the same player. He's an extreme pull hitter who isn't as speedy and isn't getting infield hits.
He got a lot of line drives last year. Last year was his highest line drive.
And that could
ever
be legitimate, but that is one of the most randomly variable indicators that a hitter has.
I don't know. I think you're being too harsh on Mr. Castro.
Well, the thing with Castro, though, is he only was the number 12 shortstop in fantasy last year, so it wasn't even that good of a year. And he only hit 3 home runs in his last 49 games. He batted .292 with 14 homers and 4 steals. I think I would wonder if he's going to bat second in the order, which rosterresource.com has him right now. Are the runs going to go up? Because he only scored 58 of those. And are the steals going to go up? Because he was batting cleanup last year. I don't, you know, again, as you said, Scott, he only had 9 steals the year before.
And he's not elite. I mean, look. Before the downfall in 2013, people were thinking of his borderline delete, which I thought was crazy back then. And I don't think anybody should evaluate him that way now. He was better. He missed some time last year. He played 134 games. On a per-game basis, he was better than some of the third-tier shortstops that we usually depend on, like Johnny Peralta, who hit over 20 home runs last year. Way better than Elvis Andrews. So it seems like he's still in that in-between tier. I think that's fair to say, even without the steals.
Okay, so we've done this podcast a little differently than the previous ones, and we're coming up on time here, so let's do some quick sleepers, breakouts, and busts, and then if we have time, we'll go through all the draft results, and you guys can talk about some values. But give me a sleeper, Scott. Favorite sleeper.
My favorite sleeper...
Javier Baez.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Baez and Segura a lot, and I have Bogarts with a breakout label instead of sleeper, whatever.
I don't know that we've talked too much about Segura. We've talked about Baez on different podcasts, but you know, you love his power. Al's not quite as bullish on Baez, right?
I think I'm more worried about the downside with Baez. I think I'm just as excited about the potential upside. But I think there's some big disaster potential there, too.
So and let's talk about Segura, who's going to be 25 years old in March and is coming off a bad year where he had a .246 batting average. He did steal 20 bases in 29 attempts. But in 2013, Segura was number 4 in points, number 1 in Roto at shortstop with a .294 batting average and 44 steals. So go for it, Scott, if you want to talk about Segura as a sleeper.
I mean, I can't make some case where, say, look at this. This is why he's going to turn things around. It just doesn't. It's hard to reconcile the good stretches of his career with the bad stretches of his career because they're so vastly different. And there's been a lot more bad than good, but I don't think either extreme is really the player he's supposed to be. He's supposed to hit for average, judging by the strikeout rates and the minor league track record and the pedigree and everything else. He's supposed to have modest power, 12 to 15 homer type, with some extra base hits, obviously. And we know he has speed. That's basically the one thing we know he has. So at age 24, considering he's shown us all of that, if only for that 2-month stretch at the beginning of 2013, he had a crappy position for an 18th round pick or whatever. I'll take a shot on it happening again, sure.
Sleeper.
A little deeper than Segura, but I like Jed Lowry as kind of that late round fallback option, which I'm probably going to need a lot because I keep on saying that I'm not interested in drafting shortstop in the earlier mid rounds. He was on my bust list last year because I had kind of mistakenly interpreted what happened with Lowry in 2013 when he went to Oakland and he became this doubles hitter that he had never really been before, and I didn't really buy it. But it turns out, you know, Lowry's a smart guy, and he, you know, saw the situation he had in Boston, Houston, and then, you know, looked at the big stadium in Oakland. So I got to change my approach, and he not only did it, but did it very successfully. And then last season, you could say that calling him a bust was something that, you know, was accurate because at the end of the season, the doubles total wasn't there. The home run power really dried up. But before he had a finger injury, he actually was on a very similar 40-ish doubles pace. So the line drives were still paying a dividend. And I think he got a little ripped off on batting average last year, too. And now he's going back to Houston. And actually, I had a question about whether or not Lowry did this intentionally. So I actually was fortunate enough to talk to him about it.
Yeah.
And he said that that was an intentional thing that he did. But now that he's going back to Houston, he's going to stick with the line drive approach because it worked for him so well. So I still see in Houston, he's not going to, you know, be this 20-homer guy. But being in the better park, I think some of the line drives will go out and he'll continue to hit doubles. And I think he's due for a batting average rebound. So I think you put that all together, and he's a guy who probably won't get drafted in a lot of leagues because of what happened last year. But I see him as being more than safe as a late rounder.
And breakout.
Breakout. And I'm sorry because I had stuff written down here. And what I had written down was Bogarts.
That's what I have marked down.
All right, why do you guys like him to break out this year?
Well, Xander Bogaerts. I think we've covered that pretty well. I mean, I like how he finished the season. I like how he started the season. I think he's shown enough patience and power. He's shown glimpses of all of it, and I think in his age, 22 season, there's a very high chance he puts it all together. Maybe he doesn't, but whatever. I don't think you're paying too much for that possibility. I will mention one player we haven't mentioned all podcast, though, and that's Jung-Ho Kang for the Pirates, who may not end up playing that much shortstop, but that's where he's eligible in fantasy right now. And, you know, if he can overtake Mercer there for regular bats, or even if he's just a guy getting 350 to 400 playing all over the place, I think in an NL-only league, if you can get him for $4 or $5 and just see how those numbers translate from Korea. I'm not expecting tons of power, but 15-plus homers from a middle infielder in an NL-only league is going to be great.
And Hurdle said just today that he sees Kang as an everyday player. He just doesn't know when and where. So that's very vague. Obviously, could be next year. But, you know, also means it could be early this season if the opportunity arises.
And busts, who's going to be a bust in 2015?
Have I mentioned I'm a little bearish on Starlin Castro?
All right, he's a bust for Al. How about you, Scott?
Okay.
A bust?
Yeah, I'll go Alexi Ramirez and Jimmy Rollins, the two ancient wonders from last year. Rollins is 36. How many shortstops are still playing at a high level offensively, at least, or really at all at age 36? It's a very short list. And the fact his home run total went from 6-1 year to 17 last year, I don't know how to explain that. It looked like he was clearly falling off, and then there was the sudden resurgence. Won't help that he's playing in Dodger Stadium now instead of Philadelphia. I think the splits were pretty even last year, but whatever, it won't help. Alexi Ramirez was 33, and I actually looked up exactly how many shortstops age 33 or older. He's 33 this year, I should say. Age 33 or older, how many in history have hit 15-plus homers in a season? And it's a very short list. I think all but two or three of the players are either Hall of Famers or borderline Hall of Famers like Jimmy Rollins and Miguel Tejada. So Alexi Ramirez is in company where he doesn't belong there, and he hadn't even hit double-digit home runs the two seasons before he hit his 15 last year. So I think we're not going to see that again.
And how about this for Alexi Ramirez? He finished with 15 home runs and 21 steals. 7 of the home runs and 11 of the steals came in the first 2 months of the season. And then he was awful. Then he had 8 home runs and 10 steals over the last 4 months
yeah,
of this season.
That's probably closer to what I expect from him over a full season.
So I'm going to throw out some names at you guys, and you tell me how you feel about them. Johnny Peralta. And let's do kind of quick here. Johnny Peralta.
I think in a roto league, he's an okay fallback option for the chance he hits 20-plus home runs.
What Scott said.
Can Johnny Peralta, do you consider him a top 12 guy?
No, absolutely not.
Because he was last year, he was top 10.
He could be what he does, you know, every third season or so. Goes off on a power binge, hits for average every now and then. Very inconsistent.
Eric Ibar.
He is kind of annoying because he's always up at the high in the rankings at the end of the year, even though he doesn't really do anything, any one thing particularly well, I guess, except not strike out, really. So he's part of that group where if I miss out on the elite shortstops and I miss out on the Bogart, Segura, Baez class, it's my last pick. I'm taking a shortstop. Okay, why not Ibar?
Brad Miller.
Also have him in the same neighborhood as Ibar, Peralta, Lowry, and somebody who could really outperform his draft position.
Angelton Simmons.
I think another year where it looks like he could be a breakout guy.
Would you rather have J.J. Hardy or Johnny Peralta?
I would rather have Peralta.
I would too.
Do you think Angelton Simmons, to go back to him, should be drafted in 12-team roto leagues with middle infield spot?
I don't have him ranked as such, but again, like I said, in the $1 area and just below, I see a lot of those players as being players with a lot more upside than a late-round pick would suggest that they have.
Yeah, I know you like Simmons more than I do. Really, the only thing I see Simmons does well is kind of like what I was saying for Ibar. He doesn't strike out. And he's young enough that he could translate that into more batting average. And we saw 17 home runs from him 2 years ago, so it's not like he's completely punchless. I'm intrigued by the possibility that the Braves' new hitting coach, Kevin Seitzer, gets more out of him because he has a reputation of doing that with players, Alex Gordon being the most famous example. So, you know, maybe that changes things for him, but I'm not counting on a bounce back or even a step forward for Angelton Simmons this year.
Didi Gregorius.
I can't wait to hear what the Sterling home run calls are on the, you know, 5 or 6 home runs that he hits.
Any way we could throw the word gregarious in there?
Sure.
Francisco Lindor, Indians prospect.
I'm not that excited about him, but actually the guy that he might replace, Jose Ramirez, I do like. I would include him in that late round sleepers with upside category. And should Lindor get called up this year? And I don't see any reason why Lindor wouldn't get called up this year. The Indians have enough flexibility with versatile players that I think that Ramirez could remain in the lineup. They could, you know, move Kipnis to the outfield and move Ramirez to second, just as an example. So, Lindor, deep like AL only. I think there's some late round appeal there, but Ramirez is actually the guy I'm more interested in.
And finally, Wilmer Flores.
Okay, so here's what kind of has... Well, there's a couple things that have me excited about Wilmer Flores. He was a very highly regarded prospect in his teens. Didn't do much of anything the next couple years. Then suddenly turned things around, started hitting a bunch of doubles, high average, 15-plus home runs a year in the minors his last couple years there. And mostly crummy in the majors last year. They eventually turned the shortstop job over to him full-time. In his last 28 games, he had 286, 5 home runs, and 842 OPS. Looking a lot like the player he was those last couple years in the minors. So they've, much to the frustration of their fan base, have not gone out and acquired a legit shortstop. Wilmer Flores probably isn't good enough defensively to play there, but, hey, Mets fans' loss is fantasy owners' gain. He's already shortstop going eligible going in, and they seem like committed to playing him every day there. So, if he hits 285 with 15 home runs, I really want to put that past him.
Unless the Mets trade him to the Rockies for Troy Tulowitzki, and then he goes to Coors Field and he totally goes off.
Even better at that point.
That's going to do it for our shortstop preview. We'll do outfield later this week. We'll have a mailbag, so email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and put baseball podcast in the subject line. Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Adam.
Scott.
Thanks, Adam.
I'm Adam Azer.
See you later.